A new Star Wars journey begins in the place all good journeys begin. At, well, the beginning. This Star Wars Day, I'm excited to introduce the new Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, where we will piece together the complete story of that galaxy far, far away, in timeline order, from the dawn of the Jedi through the great unknown following the sequel trilogy. This is a podcast for both Star Wars superfans and complete newbies. Listen to the short intro episode now to hear how it works and what to expect over the coming weeks as we set the stage for the new television series The Acolyte, which we will be covering with weekly breakdowns. Subscribe to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast wherever you listen to take part in one of the most epic and expansive stories ever told, following all the twists and turns from start to finish. May the Fourth be with you all month and beyond.
Hello and welcome to the Radioactive Ramblings podcast, a show where we are going to be covering Fallout on Amazon Prime Video. I'm one of your co-hosts, Aaron.
And I'm your other co-host, Chase. And today we're going to be covering episodes 4 through 6 of Fallout. We're going to start with the spoiler-free section with our general thoughts and impressions of the season so far, before we get into a scene-by-scene breakdown of the episodes.
All right, let's start off. Actually, before we start, I just want to take a moment and thank everyone out there who's listening. We have really grown so much more in this short period of time than we ever thought was possible, and your support just means everything to us, so thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, a big thanks to our listeners, and a big thanks to the Lorehounds for platforming us.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so... let's get in. Sorry, go ahead.
You dirty motherfucker. So our spoiler-free thoughts.
All right, so to get into our spoiler-free thoughts a little bit, I thought that these episodes, the first three episodes that is, were really fantastic, and I found myself thinking if it keeps on this pace, it's going to be a pretty decent show. And now that I've seen episodes 4 through 6, they've doubled down for me. I think that this is going to be a fantastic show. As long as they stick the landing of episode 7 and 8, this really does have the makings to be a pretty spectacular, maybe even top 5 show for me this year.
I think I would have to strongly agree, actually. Same takeaway from episode 1 through 3. I thought it was pretty good. Not anything crazy good. I thought they did a good job introducing the characters, introducing the setting, for sure. But episode 4 through 6 did a really good job expanding upon the characters and introducing us to Fallout as a world, really. And I think that with the track they're going, I mean, the show is quite great, in my opinion. And I think that if they continue this streak, the show will be definitely top 5 for me also.
The production value that they're putting into it as well is so beyond what I thought, especially with the practical effects. The things like power armor, the ghoul makeup, all of that just looks fantastic, and I thought it was all going to be done with CGI, but the way that they've integrated real live props into this series is just, they're doing a great job with it.
Yeah, completely agree there too. And I think I mentioned this in the last episode where I thought the ghouls' like nose CGI was a little weird, but I think they definitely fixed that up in the later episodes. Like, it looks much better in these episodes than it did in the first couple.
I was going to bring that up because this one of the episodes in this little block is very ghoul-centric. The episode title is actually The Ghouls, and when I was watching that, I was going to bring up that I thought that they looked pretty damn good, in my opinion. So maybe they were a little bit shaky, or maybe some weird lighting things were happening in those first three episodes.
Yeah, and I think that should be all for our spoiler-free section.
Yeah, so if you have not seen episodes 4 through 6 of Fallout on Amazon Prime Video, now would be a good time for you to head out if you care about spoilers. If you don't care about spoilers and you want to stick with us and hear our thoughts on these three episodes, feel free to stick around while we dive right into it.
Also, on a side note, all spoilers from games will be fair game. We will try and give you a little bit of a warning, but just so you know, we will be discussing it, so don't be too surprised if we spoil something.
especially with these three episodes, there's a lot to say about the games with this.
All right, now covering episode 4, it starts out with the ghoul and Lucy traveling through the wasteland after the ghoul's vials were broken in episode 3. They walk into an abandoned building where there is another ghoul, and it seems that that ghoul is losing his sense of self and becoming quote-unquote feral. The ghoul mentions apple pie, trying to, I think, you know, get his friend, it seems like they used to be acquaintances or some sort, into like a happy mood before putting him out of his misery. And then the ghoul harvests his dead body for ass jerky meat.
That was a really good line this episode. Ass jerky don't make itself.
Yeah, I think before we move on to the rest of the episode, I kind of wanted to talk about that scene a little bit. It seemed like they were like old acquaintances slash maybe even kind of friendly, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, we get in that scene, we get a little background on the ghoul's notoriety within the Fallout universe, kind of as a really renowned bounty hunter.
Yeah, and we get another pretty key piece of information from, I think the ghoul's name was Roger that he was talking to. And Roger says something about how he made it 28 years without turning feral, and says that that's a pretty good run, which makes me think that, you know, most ghouls out here, they're going feral pretty quick. And the ghoul, our ghoul, having lived for, what is it, almost 250 or so years now, that's an anomaly. That's kind of wild, something that doesn't really happen out in the wasteland, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's implied that he is special, right? I think there's moments where people refer to him like special in comparison to other ghouls. I think we're clearly shown that he has a crazy skill set compared to any person in the wasteland from his all-out brawl earlier in the series. But yeah, that's just an interesting fact we get from Roger.
The other thing that we get some clarification on is that these vials, we had kind of suspected it, but these vials are necessary for the ghouls to keep their sanity and not go feral. As far as I know, this is an invention from the show. In all of the games, the ghouls don't need these vials to keep from going feral. It's more of a thing that just time and radiation take their course and rot a ghoul's brain, and that's how they become feral. But they've added this kind of vile mechanic where they need this medication to stay sane. And it's a change that I think is pretty interesting. I like the depth and the struggle that it adds to being a ghoul in this universe.
I was going to say, since I'm not familiar with the games, I didn't know whether or not they're in the games, but I kind of like it. I think it gives like a motivation for ghouls and the ghoul to keep going, you know, to keep their humanity besides just doing whatever the hell they want until they go feral because there's no way to survive.
It also adds this layer of, I don't want to say necessarily a class divide, but if you're a ghoul with skills like the ghoul and you can make money and buy these vials, you're going to be pretty well off. But if you are just an average wastelander who's found yourself turned into a ghoul, you're likely gonna go feral and it's gonna be a bad time for you.
Yeah, I'm still curious as to see if we'll ever learn what the vials actually are. You know, what do they actually do for them? Is it a special chemical or is it just like a combination of a ton of painkillers or something?
Yeah, I wonder about that too. I hope we get some of those answers as we get further in the season, or maybe a season 2. I don't know. Since we haven't gotten to episodes 7 and 8 yet, I'm not sure if they set things up for a season 2, or if things are going to wrap up at the end of this season.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a season 2, seeing how things are going though, for sure.
I am too. It seems like they've got a lot of stuff, a lot of irons in the fire, if you will, and I don't know if they can wrap it all up within one season. Nor do I think that they really want to. I think that they're hoping this will be a success and they can keep telling this story.
All right, on to the next scene in the show of episode 4. We are taken back to Vault 33, where we see Norm is on his own. Seems like he's mourning the kidnapping of his father and being alone and this time, especially since his sister also is gone. But Betty comes up to him with a slice of what I believe to be rhubarb pie to comfort him. And we kind of get a little background on their relationship and how Betty has been around for Norm since he was a small kid. They kind of have like an almost grandmother-grandson relationship.
I am starting to get some uneasy vibes from Betty in this scene. They aren't quite tipping in any direction yet, but you can definitely tell that Norm is distrustful of pretty much everyone. Another thing that Betty tells him, which is really important, is that his voice carries a lot of weight in the vault. He's the last surviving, or not last surviving, he's the last McLean in the vault. The other two are, for all these vault dwellers know, dead. So his family name gives him a lot more heft than he really gives himself credit for.
And the next scene in the episode is taking us back to the wasteland, where the ghoul starts to refill his canteen of water in, I think it was a tire, right?
I think it was, yeah. It was some dirty little puddle.
Yeah, a tire full with dirty, murky, gross, irradiated water.
Later on in the episode, Lucy says she thinks it might have been animal piss that she was drinking.
Yes, maybe animal piss. He starts drinking that, and Lucy, in her desperation for liquid, also starts drinking it. But she starts retching, I believe, after she drinks it, because it's so yucky.
Can't really blame her for that one.
Yeah. Shortly after, a fight between her and the ghoul ensues, where she's able to bite off his finger and run away, but the ghoul lassos her like a cowboy, pulls her back in, and chops her finger off.
That was so nasty. The biting off of the finger, you know that the ghoul has dirty fingers. Like, that was not a pleasant experience in any way, shape, or form.
What do you mean? It was just like a carrot.
Just like a carrot. It came off a little bit too easily, I think. She just bit down and that finger popped right off his hand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any experience biting off digits, so I'll leave that to you. All right, the next scene in episode 4 is when Stephanie, the blonde-haired woman who is Lucy's pregnant friend, stops by Chet's home. Chet is the cousin whom Lucy was messing around with. She stops by Chet's home with some of her dead husband's belongings, and she basically tells him that she thought it would be like a waste to throw them away, so she's seeing if he would like them. And she basically takes out some of the belongings and likens Chet to her dead husband and asks Chet to wear his jacket. Is it a knitted jacket?
It looked like a little sweater of some kind.
Yeah, it was like a sweater, but I couldn't tell if she handmade it or if it was just his. I don't know. She made Chet wear it, and she put a scarf that she made for her husband around Chet. And
no, wait,
basically,
you're leaving out the most important piece of clothing. The shoes that were like a child size 3.
Yeah, the child size shoes that she asked Chet to wear, which he did not put on because I think he would have torn them in half. But yeah, she put all this clothing on Chet and started calling him by her husband's name and making sexual advances on him. And they were just about to have sex when she feels her child kicking and then her water breaks.
Moving back a little bit to the scene where they're about to have sex, she's calling him Bert, the dead husband's name. And at one point, this poor guy has such low self-esteem that he goes, "Yes, I am Bert." That was ridiculous.
Just a odd scene overall.
Yeah, I guess when 3 days ago you were in love with your cousin, your standards aren't really too high. So I don't know. Chet, if you're out there, you need some therapy, my friend. You need some
Chet's
help.
Chet's just trying to get all the action he can.
That man has no standards.
He wants his cock to pop.
Like a pimple.
Yeah. All right. The next scene in this episode is where the ghoul brings Lucy to a super duper mart, and he talks into a receiver of some sorts, telling the person on the other side that he has brought someone who is near mint condition, considering she's missing a finger, and sends Lucy into the building. Lucy meets a flying robot there, which welcomes her pretty warmly, is quite gentlemanly with her, and repairs her injury, gives her a new finger that is the color of ash. It is like a rotted finger, it looks like, but it works just like new, so good for Lucy. And while she's telling the robot of the horrible conditions she's faced under the ghoul's apprehension of her, the robot lets her know that he's going to harvest her organs and shoots a trink dart into her chest, and she falls asleep.
So this is a Mr. Handy robot made by General Atomics, which is a company in the Fallout universe. The robot is being voiced by actor Matt Berry from What We Do in the Shadows, who shows up later on in a flashback a couple episodes later. It's such great casting. He's really got this down. He's hilarious as this robot.
I was gonna say, his voice and intonation as the robot were just so good, and I think it was really funny when he was talking to her and just shot her with the trank dart.
Yeah, I also love when he's like, a sex slave? What a disgusting idea. No, I'm gonna harvest your organs. I also love the flawed robot logic of, oh, we can't have you missing a finger before we take your organs. We gotta fix you up before we tear you apart.
Well, I think it's because they were gonna take her organs and then sell her as a slave, right?
Well, I don't think she would still be around if they took her organs, right? Or unless they're only taking, well, like, a kidney or something.
I don't know. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't have any experience in the human trafficking business, but it seems like it'd be more profitable to sell just like a kidney and then also sell a slave, but I don't know.
You know nothing about biting fingers off. You know nothing about human trafficking. What do you know about?
Legal things? All right, so the next scene in episode 4 is Norm taking a jello cake to the prisoners. And before I get on with the scene, I just want to know, is jello cake in the Fallout games or is that just for the show?
It's like a thing from the 1950s. So because
oh, is it actually like a real thing in real life?
No, yeah, jello cake was a big thing in like the 50s and 60s. People made jello everything back then, like it was ridiculous.
Wait, I don't understand. Is it just like cake with jello on top, or is it like cake with jello in it?
I'm pretty sure it's cake with jello on top.
Because I feel like cake with jello in it wouldn't be bad, but the jello on top feels just weird.
It's just, I don't know, I wouldn't be able to get past the weird textural part of it. Like, I don't, the jello inside of cake and, oh, I don't know if I would be able to get past it. It
well,
kind of
I think
seems
it's
nasty.
It's kind of like that, it has like jello in cake, I'm pretty sure.
If you're from the UK and you're listening, write in. Let us know. Give us your feedback. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, I don't know. But I know there's something like it, but I don't know. Okay, back to the scene. But before Norm can give the jello cake to the prisoners, he sees that the prison guard is looking at the jello cake almost ravenously. And he hands it off to the prison guard saying no one will know whether or not he gave the jello cake to the prisoners. So the prison guard takes the entire jello cake back to her room. I thought she was just going to take like a piece of it, but she took the whole thing.
Some people are so greedy.
The next scene is where Norm convinces Chet to go with him to explore the ruins of Vault 32. After picking rocks out of the way from the explosion that Moldover caused, they are able to crawl through the rubble into Vault 32, where they see some pretty gruesome sight.
Vault 32 is, suffice it to say, pretty banged up and not doing well. You know, the assumption would be that the Raiders and Moldover did this, right? So they're going through the vault, and they see things written in blood all around the vault. They see all these corpses that seem to have strangled each other, not been killed by the Raiders. One of the the things that really stuck out to me about these scenes that kind of point to the vaults being a little bit more to them than meets the eye is on one of the televisions, the guy who killed himself by sticking a fork into a toaster is watching a TV that has the Vault Tech logo in the bottom right corner. And it's all about an experiment where rats are put into close quarters with each other and not given food and eat each other. Which, why would that be a Vault Tech official video, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's quite odd, especially because I'm sure everything that's played on their TV is pre-recorded, right? Because yes, there's no new television programs happening. So it seems a little weird that they're saving space for that. I feel like the TV should definitely be something for entertainment, you know, or for education. Don't know how the rat thing is entertaining or even educational. I mean, I guess it teaches you a little bit, but I don't think anything important for their survival, you know?
Definitely not. And then the other really spooky detail was all of these vault dwellers, or at least a bunch of them, are piled up dead in front of the entrance to Vault 31. And written in blood, it says, "We know what's in there."
Yeah. That's another point that I think was really interesting. We're getting a lot of, I don't know, hints at something almost sinister happening in Vault 31, but we'll get more into that later in the episode. All right, and our next scene in episode 4 is when Lucy wakes up tied down to a hospital bed before getting her organs harvested, and she kind of goes badass mode here, you know, like James Bond escapes. She kicks the robot in a way where its saw cuts her restraints, and she defeats the robot in combat. She then is able to use some acidic chemicals in combination with the robot's tranquilizer gun to not subdue, but
like hold hostage.
Yeah, hold hostage her captors so that she can free all of the ghouls that are trapped in cages in the Super Duper Mart. And when they free them, not all of the ghouls are freed for some reason, and Lucy tells them to free them all, but they warn her, telling her that she doesn't want the rest of them freed. But she still forces them by threatening to shoot them with her acidic dart, and she gives them a little demonstration by shooting their couch. So they free all of these ghouls, which turn out to be feral, and the captors and the ghouls all kill each other except for one last feral ghoul who's just on the brink of becoming feral, calling herself Martha, trying to remember herself, but she ends up losing herself and attacking Lucy, and she has to kill her and learns about feral ghouls the hard way.
That was so sad.
That was kind of sad.
It was really tragic to hear Martha just repeating her name and Lucy trying to reach out one last time, trying to make her remember her humanity. And this poor ghoul loses herself. And yeah, it was just, it was heartbreaking to see that happen and to know what would have happened to Roger if the ghoul hadn't shot him in the head. Even though earlier in the episode, what the ghoul did was partially out of mercy and partially to eat Roger. In the end, I think that he did it more because he felt for Roger and knew where that situation was going and didn't want his acquaintance or friend or whatever he was to him to suffer living through life as a feral.
Yeah, thou shalt get sidetracked by bullshit every goddamn time.
Such a good line. Such a good line.
That was pretty funny.
You know what else was a great line from this scene? When Matt Berry, or the Mr. Handy robot, revs the saw and goes, "Don't worry, this won't hurt a bit."
Yeah, that was pretty good. All right, now we cut back to Norm and Chet in Vault 32, and Norm is going through the computer record in, I believe, the Overseer's office in Vault 32, and he's trying to find out how Moldover and the Raiders got into the vault. And he realizes that they used a Pip-Boy actually to get into the vault, and that it was in fact his own mother's Pip-Boy that they got and used to get into the vault.
Yeah, so now we know that Moldaver's comment in episode one, where she tells Lucy, "You look just like your mother." There's definitely more to that. Absolutely, without a doubt.
Yep. And then we cut back to Lucy after she's laying waste to the super duper mart. She walks out front and sees the ghoul collapsed because he has not had his vials. And she actually lays a handful of vials out right next to him, talks about how she realizes what's going to happen to him if she doesn't get the vials, and she basically says, "That's the golden rule, bitch," and walks off like a badass.
And it's a good callback to earlier in the episode where the ghoul is kind of taunting her, being like, "How's your golden rule doing now?" And she tells him, "I may end up looking like you, but I'm never going to be like you." Yeah, she's really coming into her own as a badass in this episode.
For sure.
Before we move on, I just wanted to say one more thing about the Super Duper Mart. In the games, these are like all over the place, and in a few of them, you get sent on quests to go and loot them. And it was so hard for me to watch Lucy walk through this Super Duper Mart without taking everything. I was like, "Abraxo cleaner, you need that. Glue, you need that." Every time I was like, "You need that. That's crafting materials."
I was gonna say, I saw on TikTok a video about the episode after I watched it, and it was some guy saying how he's surprised she doesn't have a backpack full of fans for some reason, and I don't know what that's in reference to, but that's kind of funny.
The fans give you screws in the game, so like if you want to mod your weapons, you need screws, so you just pick up desk fans from all over the place so that you can mod your weapons.
That's pretty good. All right, our final scene of episode 4 is the ghoul, after he's able to use some of the vials that Lucy saved for him, he walks into the Super Duper Mart and sees all the vials that the slave traders and organ harvesters basically were hoarding, and he becomes gluttony and drinks like 10 of them, and he's like, he drinks like a bottle of either vodka or gin, I believe. He's just getting super fucked up and enjoying Lucy's wake of destruction within the Super Duper Mart. Starts using the television. The show episode ends on him watching the beginning of, or not even the beginning, just a scene from one of his westerns he filmed earlier in the series we saw in a flashback.
Yeah, he's yearning for the old days a little bit here. He wants to remember his life as an actor. Probably a simpler time for him before being a ghoul and living in the goddamn wasteland and getting sidetracked by bullshit every goddamn time. And he... closing thoughts or feelings on episode 4, The Ghouls?
I thought that episode 4 was very, very enjoyable. We got a lot of background on ghoul lore. Not the ghoul, but just like ghouls in general. It was interesting to see a lot of the things we saw in this episode. I thought exploring Vault 32 was really interesting. Lucy's badassery was pretty interesting.
The other thing that I thought was pretty interesting in this episode, I'm assuming that these two guys in the Super Duper Mart are manufacturing these vials, right?
They didn't seem smart enough to be doing so, but I don't know.
Maybe the robot is doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah, maybe.
They've got all these ghouls locked up in the little glass tubes, whatever, and earlier in the episode, it seems like when the ghoul cuts open his friend Roger and starts eating his organs and ass, it seems like that kind of sustains him a little bit in the same way that the vials would. So I wonder,
are you gonna speculate if the vials are made out of ghouls?
I think that it's possible that you might need ghouls or ghoul blood or something like that in order to make this ghoul medication.
Not the ghoul-on-ghoul violence.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of pointing to that, right?
Maybe. I didn't even think about that, honestly. I thought they were just holding them for slave trade, I'm not gonna lie, but pop off, queen.
They very well could have been just holding them to sell later, but they seem to have a lot of ghouls sitting there, and at the same time, like, why would they be keeping the feral ghouls unless they had some kind of use for them?
That is a very good point, especially because they could have just, like, executed them or whatever if they were, like, that much of a problem. But they certainly do have value if they're keeping them caged up for some reason.
Let's move on to episode 5, but first, let's take a quick break. And we're back. Let's move on to episode 5, known as The Past. We open on Thaddeus and Maximus, who is still posing as Knight Titus. They're having a good time around the fire, and Maximus ends up branding Thaddeus and immediately reveals that he indeed is not Titus. They fight a little bit, Thaddeus takes his fusion core, and Maximus gets trapped in the power armor. How fucked up is it that he branded him before telling him that shit?
Yeah, I was gonna say, what the hell, man? I mean, Thaddeus even remarks at it. He's like, you even branded me, what the fuck? I'm pretty sure, also, didn't he, like, crush Thaddeus's ankle with the power armor, too?
He did crush Thaddeus's ankle with the power armor. That looked bad. That guy is gonna be struggling to get that head across the wasteland after that injury. Poor Thaddeus. I feel bad for him. I do feel bad for him. Maximus just keeps solidifying himself as a bad person.
I was gonna say, Thaddeus isn't a great person, but he's honestly probably better than Maximus as a person.
Yeah, I mean, poor Thaddeus was like, Titus and Thaddeus, the T-boys, like, we're gonna do everything together. Poor guy was so excited. He thought that he was getting close with his knight, and then Maximus just turns around and ruins everything. I don't know why Maximus thought that that would go over well, revealing himself to Thaddeus.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Maximus can ever return to the Brotherhood. So,
yeah, I kind of doubt it. Unless Thaddeus just never makes it back and can't tell anyone about it.
He would have to kill Thaddeus and come up with some crazy story, right? Like, he would either have to be like, Titus died, and that was me over the intercom, and Thaddeus got here and he died, which would be weirder than him being like, I guess I didn't actually die, Titus left me for dead, Thaddeus killed Titus, and then I killed Thaddeus.
Yeah, no matter what, he's gonna have to get a story straight, because he's kind of fucked, isn't he?
Yeah.
Alright, moving on to the next scene, Lucy finds Maximus trapped in the power armor and saves him after they go back and forth for a little bit. Lucy is understandably not in the mood to be trusting people at the moment, but once Maximus promises her a little bit of rat away because she's got radiation poisoning, he finally gets let out of the power armor. She kind of geeks out over the power armor, too. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, she has more knowledge on it than him, it seems like, almost. And it almost seems like she might have some sort of power armor training. Not physical, but maybe through, I don't know, television, video, reading, something.
Yeah, I don't know if they have this in her vault, but simulations are like a thing in the Fallout universe. It's kind of like rare technology. It's here and there, not all over the place. So it's possible that she could have done like power armor training in a simulation too, which would be pretty cool. Anyways, she collapses and
Maximus catches her before she falls to the ground.
Next, we see Norm and Chet get back to Vault 33, and Betty is questioning them. She's like, where were you two? Why did you both look so dirty? And
Norm lies about picking potatoes, I think.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we were planting potatoes, don't worry. It was so funny that the moment they get back, they're trying to figure out their story, and Chet goes, it doesn't matter. If someone asks, I'm gonna have a heart attack.
Yeah.
The immediate grilling by Betty after that was so good. Poor Chet, man. How'd they make me feel bad for a guy who's in love with his cousin?
I know, right? Why do I feel so fucking bad for him? He's not a good guy. He fucks his cousin.
Yeah, it's rough. Moving on to the next scene, we see Lucy and Maximus making a little deal with each other to head off together. I don't have much more to say about this scene. It was a pretty short one.
Yeah, they kind of got straight to the point with it.
And we move on to Vault 33 Election Day, where Davey, the guy with the really bushy mustache, tells Reg that he's going to be voting for Betty, and Reg really doesn't want to hear it. He's like, we have private voting booths. You don't have to tell me anything, man.
Yeah, but Davey just keeps going on and on about how he's not going to vote for Reg.
So the voting happens, and even Reg himself goes, who am I kidding, and casts his vote for Betty instead of himself. Then we move on to Lucy asking Maximus for a history lesson of what's happened in the last 200 years. She goes, we know everything that happened up until the bombs drop, but what happens in the 200 years after that? And then Maximus goes, well, the bombs dropped when I was a kid, which is really... Lucy's like, what the hell are you talking about, man? The bombs dropped over 200 years ago.
Yeah, right? I mean, I was a little confused there, and I think that was just Maximus lying, right? Or not lying, but just being wrong, right?
Well, we're going to get to this later in the episode, but I think it was more of a hint that he was talking about some different bombs
dropping.
Yeah, he was
talking about the NCR, right?
Yeah. So that was a good little hint to that, actually. I thought that was pretty clever, the way that they fit that in. Moving on to Norm back inside of the vault, we find out that every overseer in their little triple vault situation from 32 and 33 have all been from Vault 31. Every single one in all of history. Now, that really starts to raise some questions about what's really going on here. This is a trend that kind of continues with Betty, who's just been elected to be the overseer of Vault 33. Even her own father, Lucy's own father, was from Vault 31. It's just, it really starts to make you question what's happening. We also learn in the next scene that Stephanie is from Vault 31. Now, she finishes up her shower, Norm is chatting with Chet, but before Norm leaves their little apartment, he stops and asks Stephanie what life was like in Vault 31.
Yeah, and she basically just gives some lame generic answer saying the mashed potatoes were better, to which Norm remarks that's the same thing his father told him, which is kind of suspicious, you know? It leads on to the thing, or the idea of maybe them having a script. They're not really supposed to give away what's actually happening in Vault 31. Maybe some nefarious things are going on behind the scenes.
The people from Vault 31 also seem to be, probably intentionally, a lot more competent, I want to say.
A lot more gifted. I mean, we see during the Raider invasion, her father is like taking fools out, you know? He's kind of a good fighter. Not only that, I mean, being elected to overseer, he's probably demonstrated his intelligence. We see Betty is quite the manipulator, we're seeing. And we see Stephanie was also quite the fighter. She got the fork in the eye and still laid the wombo combo on the Raider, so...
While pregnant, too.
Yes, exactly.
In our next scene, we finally find out one of the answers to our big question from last week, and that is, where the fuck is the NCR? Lucy and Maximus walk into the ruins of Shady Sands, the former capital of the NCR, which had a population at its peak of over 34,000 people. They come upon a crater and Lucy finds out that Shady Sands was nuked.
I have a little question.
Yes.
I know we were talking about it, I think, in our previous podcast episode, but you're saying the NCR was built around a huge nuke, right? Like a deactivated one?
No. So that was Megaton from Fallout 3, which is on the East Coast.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, did that shit just go wrong? But never mind.
No. Yeah. And Lucy gets there and she's just in shock. She's like, you know, this... place, what, how could this have happened? Reclamation Day didn't happen, the vaults didn't open. And Maximus has to kind of look at her and be like, without saying anything, she has to come to the conclusion that, oh, the vaults did open, the world was repopulated, and nuclear annihilation happened again, and we missed literally all of it. 200 years of history, a whole new nation, and we were not here for any of it. That has to hurt.
It kind of also lends shade to Vault-Tec, you know? It's kind of weird that not all the vaults are opening at the same time when it's actually safe to explore the surface. It seems that a lot more than meets the eye is happening with Vault-Tec.
Yeah, we're really getting a lot of hints to that between the stuff that we saw last episode happening in Vault 32, all of the stuff about Vault 31 electing overseers to the other vaults. Things are just getting really suspicious in this episode with them.
After they see the basically nuked out NCR Shady Sands, they explore a little further and they find a hospital, which honestly is not even that damaged considering the surroundings, because of Maximus's injury from their encounter with the fiends where he got shot in the arm. Lucy decides to go in search of first aid or any help that they can get for him, and they get separated, and while Maximus is chasing after her trying to find her, he gets trapped in basically a trap an actual trap where there's a false door handle, and he gets like sleeping gassed.
The vault that they fall into is unknown at this point, but we did see as they were walking into this vault that it had the Vault-Tec logo on there. Or I'm sorry, on the hospital that they were walking into, it had the Vault-Tec logo, or at least like a version of it, and they were calling this Hawthorne Subsidiaries, or Hawthorne Labs, a subsidiary of Vault-Tec, which is a new thing. It might be like maybe a chain of hospitals owned by Vault-Tec. We know that Vault-Tec had their fingers in everything. They had investments in a lot of stuff in the Fallout universe before the war. So Vault 33, we cut back to Vault 33, and they have come up with a idea. Betty wants the citizens of Vault 33 to take part in a repopulation and resettlement campaign of Vault 32. All of the Vault dwellers decide that they're going to do a tour of Vault 32. They go check it out. Everything is cleaned up. The dead bodies are gone. The blood is painted over. And this place that we saw just an episode ago that was completely destroyed and disgusting is all cleaned up.
Yeah, we see Norm having basically flashbacks as he's walking through Vault 32, seeing all the dead bodies and items that were used for suicide or to kill others put back in place. And he's so distraught and disgusted almost. And Betty finds him in the overseer's office, and they kind of have like a little weird interaction. You could tell she's almost on to him.
He doesn't make it very hard for her to be on to him, because he immediately is like, oh, great job cleaning up in here. You know?
Well, I mean, I think they already knew, like, he had seen the carnage, right? Or some of it, because he went in there and then he ran back and he was like warning people. He was like, something's wrong. Vault 32 is like fucked. And was that episode one, I believe, right? Episode one or two? Yeah, I don't know if she knew about him doing that, but I don't know. So either he did give himself away for snooping around in there early, or he's just going along with what they know.
Yeah, I guess they do definitely know that raiders were in that vault, so no matter what, I guess him saying, oh, great job cleaning up, isn't that weird for him to mention. Because it would have been a mess whether it was what actually happened or the story that they're going with about how the vault got destroyed. Do you think that the vault was cleaned up by the citizens of Vault 31 or whoever is living in Vault 31? They had to have done it, right?
That's exactly what my theory was going to be, is Betty contacted her, like, 31 groupmate partners, you know? She's like, I need this done, and they did that shit while she was running shit in 33. Unless it comes out that she has like a group of like 10 loyalists with her and they spent fucking weeks cleaning that. I don't see how she could get away with that scale of job with even a large group of loyalists from 33 without literally everyone finding out, you know?
Yeah, she definitely had to have contacted Vault 31 and been like, we need a cleanup crew in here immediately. Shit went down and we can't have them finding out about this.
Yeah, either that or something even crazier. She has like mold over and her people come back into the vault and clean that shit up, which I think it definitely has to do with 31, though.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be Moldaver. I think that Moldaver is definitely anti-Vault-Tec, anti-Vault.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we see some of that later.
All right, before we move on to episode 6, any closing thoughts or notes?
Lucy and Maximus wake up in a vault is the closing episode scene. But yeah, other than that, this episode was really entertaining to me, actually. I thought this was one of the best episodes of the season so far. The mystery was really alluring to me. I really like mystery, so trying to figure out what the fuck is going on with these three vaults in their triplet and 31 basically probably controlling the strings of it all. I'm really into that. Seeing Thaddeus's reaction to Maximus revealing himself, you know, I think they did the best possible thing they could have done writing wise with that. I think that was the most realistic reaction we could have gotten. Yeah, I wish I could have seen Maximus and Thaddeus make up and become friends, but you know, they're raised practically in a cult-like scenario, so it makes sense that Thaddeus is wildly more, I don't know, loyal to the Brotherhood than Maximus. Yeah, and seeing Norm's and Betty's relationship develop from almost grandmotherly love to suspicion, like sneaking suspicion of betrayal, is kind of interesting.
I'm really liking that character development. I'm continually impressed by the world building that they're doing in this. The way that they're adding upon all of the lore that's in the games with the whole destruction of the NCR and continuing on with trying to build up the mystery around Vault-Tec. And this episode didn't have anything to do with the ghoul and his backstory, but that's also a really interesting thing that they're doing. So many of these plots, like what's happening in the vault, I think that could have been easily like a boring C plot that no one really cares about, and you're just thinking to yourself, oh, I can't wait till we get back to the wasteland, like I don't want to hear about this. But they really made it interesting, you know?
Yeah, they're doing a really good job introducing the lore to newcomers, for sure. At least, like, for me going in with little to no knowledge on Fallout, I mean, I don't feel lost in any way. I mean, sometimes I do, but not in a bad way, you know? Like, they're introducing shit and I'm learning and I'm hungry for more, you know? I'm excited for the next episodes. I'm really enjoying it so far. I think they're doing it in a digestible manner too, you know? It's not like I'm getting 10 minutes of exposition at the beginning and end of every episode explaining shit. Like, they're really having a good, they're doing a good job having characters introduce shit into the world, and we can learn along with Lucy.
Yeah, it's really cool that for newcomers to the series who've never played a Fallout game before, Lucy is the audience in that way. She doesn't know anything about the wasteland, and as she's learning everything, the audience is getting to learn. And even if you've played the Fallout games before, this all takes place at least a decade after the last Fallout game, so there's so much that the Fallout players don't know, and learning everything along with her has been super enjoyable. It's a great way. It's the way that all the Fallout games operate, where you are sort of this fish out of water and you have to learn about the environment as you explore it. I think the show is doing it in a pretty incredible way. I'm liking the way that they're introducing these concepts to everyone. Let's move on to episode 6. Chase, take it away.
Episode 6, titled The Trap, opens up with Cooper, better known as the Ghoul, doing a commercial for Vault-Tec, showing off Vault 4, where it is specified that Vault 4 is doing a 5-year trial period with people right now in the current setting of the commercial being aired, with only scientists that will be living in Vault 4. Vault 4 is going to be a little prominent later on in the episode. And when he finishes filming the commercial, a man approaches him and talks about how he's Bud Askins, who helped develop, I believe, the T-45 power armor, and was kind of bragging about it a little bit. But Cooper kind of stabs back, talking about how when he served in the war in Alaska against the Russians,
it was actually the Chinese that they fought against.
Oh, the Chinese? Oh, when he said communists and Alaska, I thought Russians.
No, yeah, that's we can get into the lore after you finish this, but I'll give a little explanation in a second.
All right, yeah, because, I mean, later on, we can also talk about it. Yeah. It gets a little more into quote-unquote commies. Yeah. But, yeah, he kind of stabs back. He's like, you know, I had to wear the T-45, and a lot of my friends did, and that shit kind of sucked, you know? A lot of the issues that you shipped that suit of armor out with got a lot of people that I cared about killed. So he doesn't like Bud at all. As he's walking away to talk to his wife, he calls Bud Buck, I think, in a little hostile manner. Probably deserved it, but yeah. And he's getting a little flirtatious with his wife. He's trying to get her into the hot tub, you know. But she tells him they actually have to go to a party, and he's like, "What the heck? I don't want to go to a stupid party." And she's like, "Well, it's at our house, so boo-hoo."
The other thing that I thought was really great about this scene was how clueless Bud Askins is to the fact that Cooper just wants nothing to do with him. Cooper obviously has some hatred towards him because of the whole power armor thing, and Bud is just not reading the room whatsoever.
Yeah, self-absorbed, to say the least.
Absolutely.
our next scene in episode 6 is actually at Cooper's house. You could see him preparing to go down to see all of his guests. He's playing with his dog. He's getting his suit ready. He goes down and he basically ignores all the guests. He's smoking a cigarette, gets a martini, and he walks outside where he sees someone he's friendly with who turns out to be his only friend at the party. All the other people he invited weren't able to show up because they were having a quote-unquote commie meeting. He kind of reminisces about his war days with his friend and how they're Hollywood stars now, and he's grateful for that. They talk a little bit about how all of their friends are becoming communists.
They kind of imply that that's the reason why none of them wanted to show up, because they hate Cooper for being, I guess, what they see as a corporate sellout, right?
I mean, yeah, he is the face of Vault-Tec now. Commercially, technically, he's doing all the commercials. He wore the suit with the thumbs up, you know, and we're getting a little insight to, even back in this time before the bombs dropped, people were seeing that Vault-Tec was pretty shady. There's a lot of weird stuff going on, but behind the scenes that people don't trust about Vault-Tec. That's probably why they didn't want to associate themselves with him here or go to this party. Not only because Cooper's the face of Vault-Tec right now, it's also because there's a ton of powerful Vault-Tec people at this party.
It's probably all Vault-Tec people, being a rap party for the Vault-Tec commercial. For Vault 4. The other thing that gets told to Cooper by his friend here, who voices the Mr. Handy robot, who I think his name is Sebastian.
Yes.
Tells Cooper that his good friend, Charlie Whiteknife, who he served with in Alaska fighting against the communists in China, or the Chinese communists, is going to these communist meetings that Sebastian was talking about a little bit earlier. And Cooper is just appalled. He's like, oh, they got to Charlie? How did they get to Charlie? He and I fought alongside each other. We're brothers. Cooper's pretty distraught about that.
Yeah, and then we flicker back to, I guess, the present in the wasteland, where the ghoul is sort of out of sorts since he's intoxicated, still in the super duper mart. And I think these dressed like sheriffs people walk in and apprehend him, thinking he caused all of the destruction and chaos within the Super Duper Mart.
And he doesn't really do anything to disabuse them of that notion. He's just kind of like, oh, well, I guess this is where we are.
Yeah, it does seem that the ghoul is kind of a go with the flow kind of guy. You know, he's rolling with the punches.
Yeah, for real. He seems like he has the mindset of, no matter what happens to him, who takes him, he's good enough to figure it out and do whatever it takes to get out of the situation. He has no worries in the world. Maybe he's just not afraid of dying. He's like, I've lived long enough. If it happens, it happens. Or maybe he just has that much confidence in his abilities.
Our next scene is a pretty big one, where we cut back to Lucy and Maximus receiving medical attention in the vault, where they're welcomed to stay by one of the higher-ups. And it kind of camera angles pans out, and we see they're actually in a room with a label card saying test subject. And we cut to them now eating lunch in that same vault, where we realize they're in Vault 4, which was the one that Cooper was doing an ad for with all the scientists. So, you know, it gets a little hairy. We're getting a little info. What the heck is going on here, you know? So they're eating lunch. They kind of see that a lot of the residents in this vault have like mutations of sorts. The overseer has a single eye in the middle of his head that's also a large eye. There's another guy with two noses. We see a lady with glowing eyes. Something's going on in here. We don't know what, but something for sure.
We got a little bit of a clue of that when Cooper was doing the commercial. The scientist, or the chief scientist in the commercial, said that some of the experiments that they were doing was testing the effects of radiation on the human body. So that gives us a little bit of insight into maybe how these vault dwellers got the mutations that they did.
Yeah. Our next scene in episode 6 is Cooper and Barb are finally in their hot tub. You know, Cooper really wanted to get into that hot tub earlier. Now he's finally in it. And once again, he's drinking a martini. Loves his martinis. I think he mentions it's made with gin.
Mm-hmm.
My kind of martini. My kind of martini. But then Barb gets out of the hot tub, starts drying herself off, putting some clothing back on. Cooper is confused because she puts a Pip-Boy on, and he's like, what's that for? Why do you need that? And she's like, she basically is just like a sucker for Vault-Tec, you know? She's I don't know how to word it. She's just following the Vault-Tec rules, I'm assuming.
Yeah, she's very much drinking the Kool-Aid, you could say.
Yeah. So after this, Cooper goes to a bar to see his friend, I think something White Knife, right?
Charlie
White Knife. And there, Charlie invites him to one of their meetings, but Cooper seems apprehensive, but still takes the business card. I think it's like a funeral home.
They talk a little bit about how Barb works for Vault-Tec, and Cooper asks him, you know, how could Vault-Tec possibly be bad if Barb works there? You know, my wife is a good person. How could she ever work for a corporation that would be bad? It's just not possible. And Charlie is like, yeah, I like Barb. I respect her. But Vault-Tec is pretty evil. You got to find out what they actually do.
True. And in our next scene here, we see Cooper and Barb having dinner. And they're kind of they start to discuss Vault-Tec a little bit, and they have an argument. And it does seem kind of like Barb is implying in this argument that the nuclear fallout, the bombs dropping, is something that's going to be inevitable. You know, she's talking about how she's doing all of this to secure them a spot in a good vault, which is kind of also implicative of some other nefarious things happening. But yeah, it kind of goes into what Charlie was saying when they were having drinks, that it's Vault-Tec's duty to assure the fallout happens, considering their faults.
Yeah, it's the financial, I'm not a business guy, so I don't know or remember the exact term, but it's the responsibility of the corporation to have a return for its investors. And if the end of the world isn't going to happen, then what do you need Vault-Tec for? How are they going to make money if they can't sell the vaults? And it made me start to distrust Barb a little bit in this dinner scene, because she definitely knows about what's going on at Vault-Tec. The whole comment about, I'm trying to get us in one of the good vaults, she definitely tipped off that she knows what's happening with these vaults. She's not stupid. She's not off on the sidelines. She's like in the thick of it, top brass at Vault-Tec. She knows.
I was gonna say, I feel like in her head she's trying to do the right thing. She got into this Vault-Tec business, probably moved up the ranks, realized what's gonna happen, and thought her only way of preserving her family was through continuing to do what Vault-Tec says and does, and preserving them a spot in one of the good vaults. You know, from what we've seen, it seems like she's not a bad mother, she's not a bad wife. It's just that the way things are, it's probably too late for her to make a significant change, you know, try and do anything to stop Vault-Tec. So she's just going along with it, riding the wave, trying to save her family.
Yeah, people do desperate things when desperate times come up, and it's not a bad thing to want to protect your family when the end of the world is coming, when you know the end of the world is coming and you don't think there's anything you can do about it. However immoral it might be that she knows about everything and isn't saying anything, you can't really blame her for it.
Yeah. And then after their disagreement at dinner, we cut back to Lucy in Vault 4, where she's talking to the overseer of Vault 4, who's a piece of work. That guy's an asshole. What the heck is wrong with this guy? So glad he drank that moldy fucking coffee. But yeah, basically he warns her against going to the 12th floor. He kicks her out of his office, actually, after she mentions the 12th floor. But yeah, he's not a good guy. Don't even know how he got elected, but...
Yeah, man was such a dick. He was like, oh, what is it like to live in a vault that doesn't have outsiders? Like, just classic xenophobia lines that this dude is spewing out of
the guy
bullet.
With the cyclops eye, too, which is the crazy part.
The man with the cyclops eye genetic mutation is going off on an anti-refugee tangent. Like, oh my god. And the way he's like, oh, I have to lie about not liking refugees when I am up for election. I have to pretend I actually care about them. I was like, oh my god, what a fucking asshole.
But yeah, and then we see Maximus. We see Maximus's side of things in the vault. He's happy to see his armor, but realizes that it's of no use if he doesn't have a fusion core. So he kind of explores throughout the vault. He asks someone to show him where they get their energy from, and he finds their fusion core. And right as he's basically about to steal it, the person who I think is the puppet master in this vault, who is shown to be like second in command, I forget her name, catches him, but she doesn't confront him about that. She invites him to stay in room 428, where Maximus goes and finds luxuries of all sorts. He finds caviar, oysters, a ton of snacks and treats. He takes his first hot shower, what it seems like, right? He gets a nice robe and slippers that he loves. But yeah, he's just really, he's enjoying himself, most undeservedly though.
Yeah, I mean, I would be enjoying myself too if I were him and I'd only ever lived in the wasteland.
Yeah, I've never had caviar. What the hell? I want some caviar.
I want some caviar too. What the hell?
Why'd they give him such a big tin? Save some for the rest of us.
No, seriously. And I want to know, do they have like hydroponic farms with fish and everything happening in this vault?
Where's their sturgeon at?
Yeah. another little note. I don't think that we talked about this earlier. I think we skipped over this detail, but the woman who finds him, her and all of the other refugees are survivors of the nuke going off at Shady Sands.
Oh, yeah, that does add up. I mean, I think we get in that a little bit in the next scene, yeah, where Lucy explores the classroom and she finds them teaching the history of Shady Sands and the NCR. Actually, and she kind of gets her history lesson that way from what's left on the chalkboard. I mean, it's very rudimentary, but it gets the point across of the fallout, NCR being founded, and the second fallout, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Lucy has got to be just kind of in awe a little bit at the fact that in the time that she was in her vault, not knowing what was going on in the outside world, this entire country that was basically had almost the same amenities as old world America was kind of thriving for nearly or maybe even over 100 years, because the timeline seemed like the NCR lasted for a good long while. They had a good run before the bombs dropped, and I don't know whether or not there's an implication that the NCR was sort of, they were starting to fall apart before the bombs hit. We don't know if Shady Sands was the only place that the bomb hit or whether it was all of the NCR, but yeah, she's missed a lot of history, and the people of this vault are trying to keep that history alive with having an NCR flag in the classroom. I also noticed they had some pretty cool looking NCR like propaganda and military recruitment posters hanging around too.
Yeah, and while she's exploring that, she sees a large group of vault dwellers walking by. Before she follows them, one of the vault dwellers who wasn't a surface dweller and was just from the vault kind of gives her a little warning, saying that whatever she's about to get into gets pretty rowdy. She follows suit anyways.
This is a fun scene. I'm excited to break this one down a little bit.
Yeah. From here, we cut to the ghoul being taken by the sheriffs to who they're referring to as the president. And when he gets there, he realizes he knows this guy. He used to do bounties for him. And the guy kind of brags that the ghoul is the man. You know, he was the greatest bounty hunter in the land for a while. And while he's talking to the president, since they're on such friendly terms, he gets his makeshift shackles untied, and he sews his own finger back on, and then kills the sheriffs. But then that cuts away back to Cooper going to the funeral home for the quote-unquote commie meeting, where he sees his buddy Charlie and he's talking to him, but then he meets Moldover.
Yeah, that was a big reveal. That was a really big reveal. And at the same time that this is happening, he looks at the poster inside of, in like the modern day world, when he's ghoulified, he sees a poster of Moldover and is like, how do you know? Or this isn't what I remember her looking like.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. How has she lived so long, you know?
That's what I want to know. She's not a ghoul, or at least she doesn't look like a ghoul.
I'm wondering if they're doing some cloning shit with her.
Ooh, or maybe like cryogenically frozen. Yeah, I don't know what happened with her, but I'm sure we'll get an answer to how she has survived so long.
Yeah, and then we get to cut back to Lucy, where she starts to participate in this, I don't even know, ritual or ceremony of sorts. And it turns pretty bad pretty quickly. And she sees, like, I think they're drinking, like, human blood. It seems like they've sacrificed someone. They're all naked. She gets really worried and finds Maximus, tries to convince him to leave, but fails. He loves his robe and slippers too much. And then she decides she's gonna get some more concrete evidence to convince him with. So she goes down to floor 12, where she sees they've been experimenting on humans. She watches a video where a lady gives birth to, like, 100 of the fucking axolotl thingies that we saw earlier, and they eat her alive, and she gets caught down there, and it cuts away to the last scene with Maximus happily eating popcorn right in front of a television.
During the whole little ceremony that they have, we also find out that they are revering Moldaver, who they call the Flame Mother.
Yes, they had, like, a huge post, or not poster, but flag almost of her.
So last week, when we recorded our episodes 1-3 review, you had a theory that Moldaver was with the NCR, and that's looking like it's turning out to be pretty true, right?
Yeah, I thought that, but yeah, I mean, this seems like that makes sense that she's part of the NCR before its fall, or for some reason. I don't know. Still a little lost on where and what Moldaver is up to, who she is, what she's doing. I'm sure we're gonna learn that in the next two episodes, though, considering how well they've answered my questions and mysteries so far with these episodes we just saw. I have no doubt this show is gonna end off strong.
So now that that's the end of episode 6, do we want to get into some closing thoughts, theories for where the show is heading?
Yeah, okay. So, back to Betty. I do think she called up Vault 31, had them clean it up. I think Vault 31 is just a vault where they basically condition all of their dwellers to be overseers, train them to control the other two vaults in their little triplet. I think that they have some form of outside contact, you know? I think that because the father knew Moldaver, and the mother too, there just has to be some reason for them to be outside. I mean, I still have my theory that the mother is a surface dweller who they took in for some reason somehow. I don't know. That one's kind of dwindling, though. I think it's more reasonable that 31 has some form of contact with the surface.
Yeah, I think that another thing that lends to that theory, in episode 4, like right at the beginning, the ghoul asks Lucy what her name is, and when she says that her name is Lucy McLean, he kind of pauses for a minute and goes, McLean, as if he heard the name before. So I think maybe he knows her dad, and is that kind of lends to the theory that either he's from the surface, or Vault 31 has contact with the surface, or at the very least, him and his wife have been outside the vault at some point.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of weird to think, too, when her father was talking back at the wedding, how their kids were going to be ready to repopulate the surface, and it's almost convenient, you know, the NCR has, like, almost just fallen. They're getting ready to repopulate after that, maybe.
Do you think it was, like, Vault 31 and Vault Tech that did it?
I kind of do, considering Moldaver, like, you know, she came for revenge, basically, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's going on. She came for revenge. She got Lucy's father. Maybe he was the mastermind behind the NCR's fall.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen of him, he just seems so innocent, and, like, he's not really capable of doing anything horrible or wrong to, I don't know, anyone. He doesn't seem like the type of guy who would even want to hurt a fly. But the more we learn about Vault 31 and knowing that he's from there, and knowing that the ghoul at least recognizes the name, that he knows Moldaver, it's just all kind of pointing towards maybe Lucy's dad is the real villain in all this.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking a little bit as my theory for what's gonna happen. I mean, I'm sure I could be proved wrong. I don't see them having some lame twist at the end. I think they're gonna do some great things with this show so far. I'm really happy with what it they're doing.
I think so. Over on the Discord, there have been some people who've watched the whole series, and they seem to be praising the show a lot. So I think that we're in for a good two final episodes. Speaking of the Discord, Doove71 over on the Discord answered one of the questions that we had last week about the Vertibirds dropping people in.
Oh, actually? Okay, that's nice.
Doove is X-Forces, and he explained that... Give me one moment to actually pull up the message.
Oh, I see it. It's typical military doctrine for a hostile insertion. Halos, etc., are key bits of equipment and are vulnerable to... Oh, helos, like helicopters. Oh, I see. And vulnerable to small arms fire, so you don't expose them on the ground if you can help it. Okay.
So that makes sense, and we appreciate the explanation. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us.
Yeah, I think I kind of was thinking about that because I was like, they do that with paratroopers. But yeah, that makes a lot more sense, though, for sure. Especially since I'm sure everyone in the wasteland would love a vertibird if they could take one.
Absolutely. Oh, those things are nice looking, aren't they?
Those are sick, dude. Give me one of those.
No, actually.
I'd probably crash it, though.
I can barely drive a car without hitting something. I think that as far as theories go, maybe the other theory I have is I don't know that what's happening in Vault 4, maybe it's not as kind of nefarious as it seems, you know? All these people are survivors of Shady Sands. Maybe the religious ceremony just seems kind of weird to an outsider.
Yeah, but on Floor 12, though?
I guess so. It is pretty... Yeah, they're keeping women in little pods. Yeah, it's not great. I don't know. Maybe the Shady Sands refugees don't know what's happening, but the, like, mutated Vault Dwellers... They're behind that. Although, I don't know. The Overseer doesn't seem smart enough to kind of put that one together.
I don't think he's in on it.
Yeah, you think it's the Shady Sands refugees that are doing it?
Well, no. I think it's probably a combination for sure. I don't think everyone's in on it, though. But I think he's just like a puppet. I think the, like... long black hair lady is taking the reins, you know? I think she's manipulating everyone. She's controlling things from behind the scenes.
Oh, wait a second. Vault 4 was supposed to be run by scientists.
Yeah.
What if there's like a secret portion of the vault?
Oh, and they're all just doing a social experiment?
Yeah, what if they're behind the scenes trying to control things?
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised at all now that you mention it. I just think the scientist portion, though, is just them doing all the experiments on Floor 12, in all honesty.
For sure. So you think the only scientist here is pretty much the guy with the nose on his forehead and he's like conducting all these experiments in the basement?
I mean, I'm sure there's more scientists, but he's probably like the lead scientist or something.
Yeah. Wonder if there's any genetic or like, wonder if there's any advantages to having a nose on your forehead, an extra nose on your forehead.
Well, you get to smell shit twice. So
he's out here smelling in 3D.
Yeah, I don't think there could possibly be another advantage to having another nose on your forehead.
Yeah. He also, when he found Lucy down there, he seemed pretty concerned about the possibility of one of these women in the pods, like, getting out. So that kind of leads me to believe that not everyone in the vault knows what's going on down here.
I mean, yeah, I don't think everyone is, because the way... they talk about Floor 12, I think only certain people actually have been down there and actually know what's going on. I'm still convinced the Overseer doesn't know what the fuck is going on.
He just seems too stupid. Maybe this is me just hating on him because he's an asshole, but he just seems too fucking stupid.
He's just a fucking idiot, that guy.
I think that they're setting up pretty well that Maximus is going to steal the fusion core from this place and put it into his power armor to save Lucy, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen, too.
Yeah, I don't know. He seems pretty comfortable. I don't know if he's ever going to actually leave that room to go and rescue her or not.
I mean, I think they're setting it up to make it look like it's going to be like he's going to struggle to come to his realization. But I think he's going to do it, right? Like, there's no way they just fucking make him like a brain rot TV popcorn eater watcher for the rest of the series.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of already brain rotted. Like,
yeah, He really wanted his cock to pop after eating the oyster.
We didn't even talk about that scene, how awkward it was, Lucy being like, oh, you want to have sex now? And he was like,
Use my cock? You mean use my cock? I'm actually a knight of the Brotherhood. We're not supposed to do that.
And then him being confused about how erections and orgasms work.
Sometimes it gets really hard and pops like a pimple.
Do they have no sex ed in the Brotherhood? They've got to have something going on.
He's a tweaker.
Yeah, we have gotten it proved to us a few times now that Maximus does not pay attention in the classroom. So
yeah, that too.
That's all the theories that I have for this week. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's about all. All
right, you want to talk a little bit about how people can get a hold of us?
There are a few ways to contact us or send us feedback. First of which being email, which is fallout@thelorehounds.com. We also have a channel set up for the Radioactive Ramblings within the Lorehounds Discord server, where you can send us a message or chat about the show with each other. And finally, you can use a contact form or leave us a voicemail by going to thelorehounds.com. And please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other listeners like you find us. And thank you guys for your support.
Thank you guys so much for your support. And before we let you go, we are going to give a little shout out to our fellow podcasts in the Barovian Podcasting Network. We're super stoked to be a part of this network. A few of the podcasts in the Barovian Podcasting Network include The Lorehounds, our parent podcast, and currently they are covering Shogun on FX. They've got some full season coverage, and that's being covered by David and John, as well as Alicia from Wool Shift Dust. Wool Shift Dust is the podcast run by Alicia, where she covers Beacon 23, and she's got an interview with author Hugh Howey coming up soon, so stay tuned for that. That's pretty exciting. One of the newer podcasts in this little family is Rings and Rituals, a podcast where Tolkien scholar and researcher Marilyn R. Pukila, as well as Dr. Sarah Brown from Signum University, analyze season one of The Rings of Power through the lens of ritual, while also looking at the bigger Tolkien legendarium. They look a little bit also at ritual in our daily lives. And also consider checking out Properly Howard Movie Review, a series where two old friends review movies. Anthony is an academic and Steve is a stand-up comic. They rate movies on a scale of better or worse than a Ron Howard film. They've got a new season theme, Felonies and Fugazis, where they break down some crime movies. They've got a preview pod out now where they draft their movie picks for this season. Check it out, it's pretty funny. And lastly, consider giving us a follow on Twitter, where we are at Radioactive141. All of this information, as well as how to get a hold of us, is going to be available in the show notes. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.